more powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman. Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Good evening to everybody. The program is off the wall. Sorry for the late start that we had today. I'm not quite sure why that was, but I guess we'll be a little bit abbreviated tonight as it's 10 minutes past the hour, and we're just getting started here. How about that? It's just as well. Traffic was a mess anyway. Usually is, but what are you going to do? Well, we're going to read the news and appeal to people to give us a call, too, at 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. That's our phone number. We're interested in hearing what's on your mind as far as what's been going on in the last week. The presidential election is 3 weeks away. Oh, my God, 3 weeks away. What can possibly happen? What can possibly happen in the next 3 weeks to help push those undecided people to one side or another? Well, obviously, the debate tomorrow is going to play some part in that. But I got to tell you, you know, if you haven't made up your mind by now, I honestly don't know what it's going to take. You know, maybe something, a letter from God or something like that, or I don't know. If you're undecided, I'd like to hear from you. I really would, because I want to pick your brain and find out just what's going on in there. You know, what is it that is making you say, well, you know, I could go this way or I could go that way. It just seems to me that if you have already decided that you want George W. Bush to do another four-year gig, you're pretty much going to stick to that no matter what happens. I think recent history has shown that it doesn't matter what he actually does, doesn't matter how bad things get. People who call themselves Republicans, I guess, or some of them anyway, because certainly not all of them, but the mainstream Republicans will just ignore it. And he'll say, yeah, you know, it's okay. It's okay. He's learning. He's learning. He's getting better. And we're going to give him a shot. Yeah, he won the first debate. He really did. He won that first debate. I mean, you know, that just tells you how these people, I like using the phrase these people very much, but there's no other phrase I can use. These people seem to really not have a firm grasp of reality. Now, I'll admit when Carrie does something stupid. All right, I'll do it right now. The last debate, it was ridiculous. He kept saying the same things he was saying in the first debate. You know, the 90% of the casualties, 90% of the... All these sound bites. Well, I'll answer your question in a moment, but first I want to address something that was mentioned last week. You know, that's what he would do. He would never answer the question. How many times did he say, I have a plan? My God, how many times did he say that? He said it more times than Martin Luther King said, I have a dream. He really did in that one speech, you know? It's, you know, at some point, even if he does have a plan, and even if what he's saying is correct, there are times when you just want to shake him because the presentation is so annoying. So you see, I can criticize the side that, yes, I am supporting. It's not necessarily because I want to support that side. It's because I feel the other side is just so, so much of a disaster. But I also have a confession to make. It's kind of like that whole train wreck thing. If Bush gets reelected in November, I'm not really going to have that much of a problem with it. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. It'll be horrible. Many people will die. All kinds of innocent lives will be lost, and wars will be fought for no good reason. The economy will catapult downwards like a brick out of an airplane. You know, all kinds of horrible things will happen. We'll be miserable. We'll be angry. We'll start taking it out on the people that matter the most to us. But it will be interesting. You know, there's a part of me that kind of is fascinated by just how bad can it possibly get. You know when you're having kind of an argument with somebody and you know that you can clear it up pretty easily just by saying, well, you're not understanding me here. I didn't mean it that way. You just sort of keep going because you want to push their buttons and you want to see just how flipped out they'll get, you know, how crazy they'll actually go. And that's sort of what the whole country is doing right now, you know, in the eyes of the rest of the world. Just how bad is the United States going to get? You know, how many other countries are they going to invade? How many other people are going to suffer as a result of this? Will the Bill of Rights be completely burned at the stake? You know, let's give this guy a blank check. Let's see what he does. There's always Canada. We can always run away. I don't know. You know, I'm certainly not advocating that type of a thing at all. But if the American people are too stupid to realize when they're on the wrong road, heading in the wrong direction, and they're too stubborn to ask for directions to get back onto the right road, well, let's see what happens, you know? That's sort of my take on the whole thing. So either way, you know, there are people throwing up their hands in despair, saying, oh my God, it's all going to be over. Well, you know, it's never over. It's never really over. You just have to sort of adjust the way that you live, the way that you feel. And yeah, we're going to have to be a little bit more sharp, a little bit more thinking about how we're just going to survive. But that brings out the best of some people, and I'm confident that those people that I have trust in will make it somehow, and maybe we'll make it better as a result of things getting worse. I don't know. I hope that doesn't happen. Of course, I can't say I hold out much hope for things getting much better under a Kerry administration, but at least, at the very, very least, and hopefully this will push some undecided people over, you're sending a message. You're sending a message to the powers that be right now that what they are doing is not cool. What they're doing does not stand and has to be challenged. And sure, Kerry may turn around and do the exact same thing, but he hasn't yet. You know, he hasn't actually done any of this yet, whereas Bush has. So, you have to send a message to the people that actually have done something. And that's how I hope it will be interpreted. And of course, the flip side to that is, if Bush does get reelected, it's kind of like a mandate to keep doing it. You know, to keep fighting wars wherever he feels like fighting wars. The whole thing is just really unbelievable. I never thought things would get to this point. Anyway, so we had two debates last week, and we have one coming tomorrow. We had the vice presidential debate a week ago today, and that was pretty interesting, too. I think it was a lot more even as far as comparing it to the first presidential debate. I believe Edwards came off a bit more likable than Cheney, but, you know, that's not really hard to do. It really isn't. And Edwards was trying to push Cheney's buttons with the whole Halliburton mention every few minutes, and he almost succeeded. He almost succeeded. Cheney was really getting kind of peeved, you can tell. But not a whole lot was settled. And then in the second presidential debate, that fake town hall format really just kind of annoyed me. You know, where you have to submit your questions in advance, and maybe they'll get approved, maybe they won't. But if they are approved, you better just read your question and nothing else. And, of course, the audience couldn't respond in any way. They couldn't applaud, they couldn't boo, hiss, throw things, all the kinds of things you expect from a debate that couldn't happen. So you had these people sitting there in stony silence, and I mean, it was better than the first one. The candidates could at least stand up and be a little animated and express themselves in various ways. And Bush did better. Yes, I will admit, Bush did a lot better than the first debate. That's not very hard to do. You know, it really isn't. If you watch that first debate, it's not very hard for him to get better. But I still think Kerry was able to sound more intelligent, able to present facts a little better, even though he was presenting the same facts over and over again. It just seemed to me that this was somebody that could probably handle the job. I mean, he was always ready, and I assume they did not know, because this is what they told us at the beginning. They did not know the questions in advance. So Kerry was always ready with some kind of statistic, you know, on how many millions of dollars were lost here and how many billions were spent there, regardless of what question was asked. So unless they were given all kinds of hints as to what was going to be discussed, it's not bad. It's not bad. The President of the United States should not be somebody that you, a lowly citizen, feel you could beat in a debate. All right? And that's how I felt about George W. Bush, the first debate I saw. I was thinking to myself, I can take this guy. This is easy. Why are we getting a second theme? Who put the CD player in repeat mode? Fine, I'll talk through the theme a second time. That's okay with me. But yeah, you know, you shouldn't have that impression of the President of the United States. He should be able to kick your ass in any kind of a debate. He should know all the facts. He should have references like you just would not believe. And I just have the sense, even though it's probably just smoke and mirrors, I just have the sense Kerry could probably kick most of our asses in a debate. Even though, you know, we wouldn't agree with him, he'd probably be able to point to more facts and figures and not run away. You know, actually face up. You know, more like sort of like Tony Blair does. Tony Blair, who I don't agree with at all on just about anything at this point, he's able to at least present his side and do a good job of it. Imagine that. Imagine what that would be like. You know, this country having a leader that the rest of the world saw as literate and competent. I don't know. It's been a while. All right. So if you have any thoughts on the debates, please give us a call. We'd like to hear your opinions on them. And if you're one of those swing voters, well, maybe this is the night where you swing one way or the other. And this programming note, we're not going to be on next week. We have an electro marathon thing going on for 24 hours starting next week at this time. And the week after that, we'll be back. However, we will be doing fundraising the week after that. So two programming notes to keep in mind. So if you want to speak out, this is your last chance for a couple of weeks anyway. All right, let's take a look at the news, see what's going on in this wonderful world of ours, and hopefully we'll have some phone calls coming in. 631-632-9872. President Bush is passing up the chance to speak to 25,000 AARP members who will be in Las Vegas at the same time he is this week. An AARP, I hate that acronym, I really do. There's no good way to say it. I guess you could say ARP, but I don't think they want to be called ARP, do they? Do they? Fine, okay. An ARP spokesman says Bush... That doesn't even feel right. Oh, well. Says Bush declined an invitation, but John Kerry accepted. A senior advocate says Bush and his handlers know older Americans are angry about prescription costs. See, that's it. They're angry, so he avoids them. Avoiding all the angry people. Just be with the happy people. Okay, that's why he stayed in that class in Florida so long on September 11th, because they were happy people. Outside, there were angry people and worried people. So who wouldn't? Who wouldn't stay in an elementary school longer on a day like that? Democratic vice presidential candidate John Edwards says President Bush is out of touch with the many Americans struggling to pay for health care and looking for work. Edwards campaigned in suburban Denver today. House Republican leaders have chosen a small but powerful group of negotiators to hammer out legislation implementing the 9/11 Commission's recommendations. House and Senate negotiators hope to pass a bill before the election. To the surprise of many observers, the Supreme Court has jumped into the middle of what some call a blockbuster religious liberty case. The court will decide if it's constitutional to place Ten Commandments displays in government buildings. Oh, great. You know, this is just what we need to be arguing about now. There's so many places you can put Ten Commandment things, you know? Why? Why is it have to? Why do we have to have this fight? I don't get it. Whole thing's silly. Anyway, researchers said, you know, try putting something from the Quran in there, you know? So try putting some other religion, try putting their symbols in a government building just as a test, you know, and see how these same people who are fighting to have the Ten Commandments put in there, see how they react to that. They welcome it with open arms, you know, and I don't know. I'll have second thoughts about them, but somehow I don't think they would. Anyway, researchers say obesity surgery is more than cosmetic. In addition to shedding weight, the surgery often cures patients' diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. The study by a surgical instrument company says body chemistry is altered. They just figured that out today? They just figured out that losing weight is healthier? Sure, you lose it by surgery, but, yeah, you know, you're still healthier in the end. I just assume, yeah. Okay, and of course, we had our tribute to Christopher Reeve at the beginning of the program. Of course, yeah, I know, I'm going to get letters about this. The TV show did not have him in it, and that was the TV theme. I'm sorry, okay, that's all I had. I'm surprised I had that. You should be grateful. It's scary, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, Kerry mentions him in his speech as one of the people that supports him, and look what happens in less than a week. Less than a week. I mean, it just makes you think. These Bush people, they'll stop at nothing. Okay, what's going on in the rest of the world here? Moscow children to wear dog tags. Yes, that is the headline. They will soon have to wear military-style dog tags. It's nice to know that there's always a country someplace where it's even crazier. But yes, Moscow school children are going to have to wear dog tags and carry special passports as part of a security drive in the wake of Beslan, of course being the school with the massacre of the school kids by Chechen rebels. The Russian capital is also beefing up protection of its schools against intruders to prevent any terror attacks like that mass hostage taking. Before the new year, most schools will have these passports, said a senior Moscow city official. The metal dog tags were already being mass-produced. And one thing about Russia, they're very passport-happy. All right, they have passports for internal travel. They have passports for external travel. And everyone always has to have one on them. So that doesn't surprise me too much. The dog tags, that's a new touch. That's new. It's kind of having collars with licenses on your dogs. It's really pretty strange. So, that's what's going to be happening. You know, there'll be dog tags on the kids. There'll be school guards everywhere. Private security firms guarding school premises. New legislation is required to clearly define the status of school premises, who is allowed in, who is not. Installing alarm systems in all of Moscow's schools will cost about 200 million rubles. That's about $7 million. And erecting security fences around the buildings will cost another 600 million. I remember when it used to be that you could just walk into a school. You know, back when I went to school, which wasn't all that long. It was a while ago, but it wasn't that long ago. Where, you know, it was like a different... Well, actually, it was a different century. Well, you know what I mean. It just... It's like night and day. You could go up to a school and walk in. Why would you do that? I don't know. Maybe you had a reason to. Maybe you wanted to talk to one of the teachers or something like that. Maybe you remember that you left something in a locker 20 years ago. Who knows? The point is, there wasn't this airport security greeting you when you walked up to the school building, because who's going to harm kids? Well, apparently, the way our culture is progressing, there are many people now that want to harm kids, including a lot of the kids themselves. It's really, that's the side of me wondering how bad it's going to get again, kicking in. All right, this is interesting. The Norwegian government was one of the governments that was named by George W. Bush as being part of the Coalition of the Willing. You've heard about this Coalition of the Willing. These are the countries that allegedly decided on their own free will to send troops to Iraq to join with us. Us being the United States government, of course. But here's the thing. More than 80% of all Norwegians oppose the U.S.-led war in Iraq. A majority also favors the withdrawal of Norwegian forces from Iraq, and still Norway is perceived as an uncritical supporter of the U.S. war on terror. Norway is on the willing list of countries that support this policy, and President George W. Bush also mentioned Norway specifically in his State of the Union address earlier this year. So a website has popped up called Tell Him No, and it's great because the top-level domain for Norway is .no, so they have the site tellhim.no. And what these guys have done is they've collected money for two ads in the Washington Post, where they explain the general Norwegian opinion about the war in Iraq and George W. Bush foreign policy. So if you go to www.tellhim.no, you can read all about this. I'm going to read you part of the letter that appears in the Washington Post. Mr. President, as friends of the United States, we respect your country's strength, creativity, and generosity. At this point in history, however, we are compelled to speak out. 4 out of 5 Norwegians oppose the U.S.-led war in Iraq, and our government has failed to clearly express the majority opinion of its people. Mr. President, we urge you to change your foreign policy. Oh, good luck. Yeah, he's going to listen to a bunch of Norwegians. Come on, he doesn't listen to a bunch of Americans. But, you know, A for effort, anyway. To pursue a flawed and failed policy is a sign of weakness. We want the United States to be strong and creative enough to apologize to the Iraqi people for an unjust war and to the Allies for having misled them. We want the USA to be generous enough to compensate the innocent victims of violence, looting, and trauma inflicted by torture. We firmly believe that the quest for peace in Iraq is best led by the United Nations and a democratically elected Iraqi government. Mr. President, your country can once again be a leading example of democracy and freedom, inspiring a world where terrorism can no longer breed. Your present policy only fosters resistance more than ever, everywhere. Mr. President, the choice is yours. Sincerely, concerned citizens and organizations of Norway. And I imagine there's organizations like this all around the world, banding together and raising money to try and send a message to somebody who doesn't even read newspapers, so it's going to be a waste of time. But hopefully the American people, we're the ones with the power right now to get rid of this guy. Hopefully we'll speak out. And then the hard part is changing the policy after that, so that we don't just continue down this road. Remember in the 1960s, reading about it in history, that is, it didn't matter who was president, whether it was Johnson, whether it was Nixon, Republican, Democrat, the war continued. All right, the policy just kept going down that same road. And we have to make sure that come whatever happens on Election Day, the message is sent very clearly. It's going to be a whole lot more difficult to send this message to Bush if he's reelected, but it has to be sent nonetheless, that this is the wrong path to be going down. And, yeah, you know, you'll see signs of progress. You know, you'll see rebels turning in their guns. But then the next day, you'll see that mosques are being bombed by U.S.-supported troops and Marines, and it just doesn't seem to get any better. And it's a very, very bad precedent. Now, you know, we had the elections in Afghanistan over the weekend, and that was pretty interesting. That was very interesting, in fact. The I'm not sure if they counted the votes. Last I checked, they hadn't, but they were starting to. Now, talk about a primitive election here. All right, this is basically a piece of paper that you fill out and stuff in a ballot box, hence the term stuffing ballot boxes. And to ensure that you didn't vote more than once, they stuck your thumb in this pad of ink, or I think it was even a bottle of ink, I'm not sure. And if you had that on your thumb, that meant you already voted. And that was their system. Now, how long has the United States been setting up these elections in Afghanistan? And this is the best they could do? Can you imagine that? Come November 2nd, where we all have to stick our thumbs in ink to ensure that we haven't voted twice? What does that tell you? What signal does that send? It tells me that they don't know what is going on. They don't know who these people are. They don't have any records. That's what it tells me. Now, regardless, I think there's a lot of progress that's been made in Afghanistan. I think, you know, the people there are in better shape now, and at least in some areas, not the whole country by far. But they're certainly better off without those loonies in power. No question there. How we got there, that's a whole different story. But where it is today, where these elections supposedly being held up to the rest of the world as an example of how the system triumphs in the end. Well, the system may have triumphed in the fact that a lot of people were willing to stand online and actually risk whatever might have happened to them for doing this. That's definitely a triumph. No question about that. But why is the system so poorly set up? And of course, the ink washed off, and that's what the whole contention is about now. The ink was able to be washed off, so a number of the opposition candidates are saying that the results shouldn't be counted. And, you know, I kind of disagree with that because, yeah, the ink washed off. How do you know that the people who wash the ink off are only going to vote for for the guy who wins? You know, they could vote for anybody then. Seems to me they should have kept their mouth shut and just kept, you know, voting for themselves over and over and over again. I don't know. But the point is, it wasn't very well run. And I think that's what we have to remember. Why? After all this time, after all this preparation, and knowing that this was something that had to be held up to the world to show how the democratic process can succeed, how could they mess it up so badly? And of course, we have our own system, too, which has all kinds of examples as to what's wrong with it. And I'm sure we'll have more such problems come November. Maybe not Florida, maybe someplace else this time. Looking at the polls, you know, things are so close, neck and neck, that I have to wonder if the same exact thing is not going to happen again. You know, where one candidate gets the majority of voters and the other candidate takes the election. And what is up with that anyway, the Electoral College? Why do we still have that? You know, after the last charade, I thought finally we were going to get rid of this thing, this antiquated system, which, you know, nobody can convince me in 1,000 years serves any purpose whatsoever. All right, it should be one person, one vote, period. Majority. And you know, the answer I get to this is that we're being protected from tyranny of the masses. What in God's name does that even mean? Tyranny of the masses? Well, what is a popular election then? If not tyranny of the masses, you know, majority rules. I thought that's what the whole concept was based on. But no, no, you can't have that. You have to be protected from that. And that's why this bizarre system where entire states go to one candidate, regardless of how many people vote for the other candidate, as long as it's less than a certain number, it's this all or nothing mentality. I don't get it at all. And how come it never applies to the states? Why does the tyranny of the masses not apply to a gubernatorial election? Only federal. It's something that may have made sense 200 years ago, just like a lot of things may have made sense 200 years ago, but no longer makes sense today. And we're too scared to actually make a change. And that's an example of how the Democrats just don't move on these things. They probably wouldn't have gotten it past the Republicans, okay, but they gave up way too easily. And I know if it was the other way around, they would be fighting to preserve it. I know that. That's why we're doomed, because people don't stand up for what's right. They only stand up for what their side says. All right, 631-632-9872. Is our stream broken? Is that it? Someone told me a rumor that our stream was broken. Hang on, let me check that right now. Bring that up?
Election, then.
Oh, there I am.
If not tyranny of the masses, you know, majority rule.
See, that's me talking on the internet a few seconds ago. So the stream is up and running, so you have no excuses. Give us a call, 631-632-9872. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hey, Josie, how you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Speaking of Electoral College, there's a bill in the Colorado House there to take the majority, you know, take all of the electoral votes away from one candidate and split it based on a percentage of how the votes are done.
Am I correct in assuming that this is a state thing, that the states have to make this change?
Oh, that's right. States have control, and they can change it however they want.
So
Colorado may do it, and it may determine who wins the election if they can split their 9 electoral.
Interesting. So would that happen for this election if that went through?
It's going to be passed early November.
Well, you know, the election is November 2nd.
Yes, but it's going to be. They said it's going to be in effect. It was on. I think some 2020 or something last night.
All right. Well, I'm down for that.
Yeah, and that's going to be the new wrinkle for 2004.
Well, I hope so. You know, I also hope that when the election is over, and of course this is a pipe dream, but you know, the candidate that loses gets some power. You know, a coalition type of a thing, like the rest of the world has. You know, where Ralph Nader would have had 5% of the House of Representatives as a result of his victory, or his loss, rather.
John Kerry and Don Cheney joining hands and singing Kumbaya.
You know, obviously wouldn't make much of a difference with this current cast of characters, but if you have a lot of different types of people running, all of a sudden you have, you know, diversity.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just want to pass that on.
We have a full switchboard. Policy. Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
About the whole election process, what I don't understand is why is it that in every state it seems that there's a different way of voting? Some have one type of machine, somebody else wants to do it electronically, other people want to do it by ballots. You would think that if for something like the presidential election, they would have one form of voting for everybody in the country, so there'd be no question about it probably would be a question, but there wouldn't be any confusion on the method of voting.
Well, the Election Commission, I believe, is not run out of Washington. It's run state by state, or even maybe county by county. So these decisions are made on more of a local level. I kind of like the fact that there's, you know, some individualism there, so we can see different systems and see what works and what doesn't work.
I don't think we've hit on anything that really works yet. I mean, the lever method that we use in this state seems to be okay.
It seems to be okay because I'm not aware of any major problems with it. But, you know, we haven't tried sticking our thumbs in ink yet.
I mean, they said if they're old machines and they still run, they can't be that expensive to produce for everybody else. You know,
what's expensive?
Like Diebold or whatever the hell name of the
company is. You know what's expensive about those machines? Storing them. You have to store them someplace for all the time you're not using them.
I mean, it's a small thing to consider when you think about the fact that you can have a certain amount of consistency in the voting process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you break it out for the gubernatorial elections and for the mayoral elections.
Yeah. No, it's I agree. We should know more about it. We should know more about how the whole system works.
Although I'd kind of be interested to try the way with the ink. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, you know, why not? If we've tried everything else, why not get ink on our hands?
You know, I mean, you get ink on your hands normally during the day anyway.
That's what happens. What happens if you get ink on your hands on election day? Oh my God, that could happen.
You know, you get ashes on Ash Wednesday.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering if you'd heard. My name is Cessna, calling from Charleston, South Carolina. I was wondering if you'd heard the new soundbite that Bush had out. I've heard that there's rumors on the internet that I'm going to start the draft. I'm not going to restart the draft.
Well, he called it the internets.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I heard that this morning when I was waking up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he basically went on record as saying he's not going to have a draft. Fine, you know, that's great. I'd like to hear Kerry say the exact same thing. But it's just funny to hear when he talks about the internet, though. They always get it wrong. You know, politicians always get it wrong. He can't even say internet. He has to say intranets, you know?
Maybe he's getting, you know, his information from, you know, Gore, you know, how he...
Maybe. But at least he didn't take credit for inventing it.
Love the show.
All right, thanks for calling. 631-632-9872. Getting a lot of calls today, so keep those calls coming in. And please, keep in mind that we have a fundraiser in 2 weeks. So if you're out there, we really could use your help and support to keep this station going, to keep shows like this on the air. All right. You don't want to hold the phone up to the radio like that.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what happens when you do that.
Pretty cool.
It is cool. I admire you for trying. What's on your mind, or is that all?
I just wanted to touch on a few things about the tyranny of the majority.
Okay.
And a little bit about the history. I'm not a history buff, but I do remember taking a few courses at Stony Brook, as a matter of fact. Dr. Ooh. Platt, Pratt, a Harvard grad, and taught us a little bit about the Southerners were very suspicious of us democratic, liberal-educated Northerners. And they had to, in order for them to go along with, you know, making it fit and making it a more unified nation, they just wanted a little bit of protection from, you know, like states that had so much population, you know, like New York and California, and they might not believe in their invisible imaginary God, you know, like sort of like Jesus, but it was just protections. And there are some issues that I think, like Lonnie Guinier, the professor, I forgot, at Harvard or Duke. But, you know, but the majority can sometimes inflict injustice, whether it's a heterosexual majority or the whites.
Of course. But
impressive.
But the
and
thing
I'm trying
is,
to think of the other thing. I didn't know I'd get on the phone so quickly with you. There's one other thing I wanted to mention to you.
Well, let me just say, while you're thinking of that, that, of course, the majority can inflict all kinds of injustice, and it's been proven over the years. But in the case of a presidential election, it's supposed to be elected by the people, not by simply the states. And I don't understand how we can continue to justify that. I mean, all the people in New York State are not liberal Democrats. They're individual people. So unless we're saying that it's just one monolithic mass and that the South has a reason to fear the New York State voting one way or another, I don't see the logic of it.
Right. Well, I just thought of the one thing about election fraud. It's so funny. Howard Stern calls us a third world nation. The way when it was first going on, I'm a big fan of his. I just like his politics and his intelligence. But He's like, he was so embarrassed that when that election nonsense. How we really are like it's so archaic. And you know, why not use social security number? I have to take my fingerprint to take the law school admissions test, Stony Brook. They wanted my thumbprint. Just to make sure if someone ever made an allegation that I didn't, you know, or just to keep, they said to maintain the integrity. So can you imagine me taking an admissions test into a graduate school? I need my thumbprint, but for voting, there's nothing. You know, how about have through three forms of ID, perhaps a driver's license or a state license in case you're blind, or state ID plus your social security card plus a phone bill, or, you know, to go to Blockbuster Video, they want three things. They want a credit card. They have to have a credit card. Cash a check today. I have to have, they want three forms because they don't want to, you know, waste the time to cash checks. My own bank wants a passport, a credit card, a driver's license, or a combination of, you know, four other things.
So are you saying it's not that big a deal to give a thumbprint for voting?
I don't think it would be. I would imagine, well, I can see why some people are fear of the government, and why should I have to put my fingerprint on file, but maybe just to protect it. I'm not going to say the government's going to run the fingerprint, but maybe to put a thumbprint. I personally would have no problem with that. I could see how many civil libertarians would, but
I suspect that's them calling right now.
The world by putting Bush. Look at all that voter fraud. I mean, it's cost a lot of 1,000 American lives and probably 10,000 innocent Iraqis, and
the thing is,
to the world, he's done.
My problem with a thumbprint is that a thumbprint really identifies you, and it identifies where you go. If your thumbprint is found someplace else, you know, it's it just seems like a real intrusion having that as your identifier. Although I think it's inevitable the way things are going now, you have to have thumbprints to get checks cashed in some banks.
Right.
I just think it's a mistake.
There is no privacy anymore. Like, and I'm a very private person, PO box and all that stuff, but maybe there's other options, like, you know, four forms of, you know, the phone bill, the Social Security card, the driver's license, state ID, but maybe an eye scan eventually. You know, nothing's going to be corrected overnight, but maybe Al Gore, someone said he was going to try to get into this election. There has to be changes, like that gentleman said in Colorado. I read about that in the USA Today, that they are considering having, of course, not enough time to do it this time, but for the next time, you know, partial electoral college. If the person just barely wins by 100 votes, that person who came in second, who still has a million votes, might get a couple of you know, couple of percentage or a small fraction. But I definitely enjoy listening to you, and you have an excellent night.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call.
You're very well.
And good evening. You're on.
Hello. You know, I was listening to you, and I had never heard you before, and I enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
But I have to correct one thing you said.
Okay.
As someone who was very active in the primaries of 1968, it would have made a huge difference if Eugene McCarthy or especially Bobby Kennedy had won that election, because both of them campaigned very strongly against the war in Vietnam and were going to do something about it. But you know what happened to Bobby Kennedy. And
yeah. Well, my point wasn't specific candidates. My point was, I mean, Lyndon Johnson was a Democrat, and yet the war continued under Johnson. I'm just saying that it doesn't matter so much. You can't define it by saying a Democrat will stop the war, because oftentimes a Democrat won't stop the war.
Well, Johnson wouldn't have, but he, in April of 68, he said he wasn't going to run again. And that opened it up, and then in June, Bobby Kennedy was killed.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're parallels now. The guy that we have, you know, the guy who's the mistake in the White House is waging a war of choice. And it is true that Kerry is saying that now that we're there, we have to win, but it was the wrong war at the wrong time. It was an incredible diversion from the real enemy, Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. But I certainly think there would be a more rational, less ideologically driven kind of reaction if we got the Democrats in. I'm not very hopeful, because you play to fear and patriotism, and it doesn't matter how much you lie and how wrong you are, you usually win in this country. And New York doesn't even matter, because we're not in play.
That's true. That's true. It doesn't matter who you vote for. It's going to go to Kerry no matter what.
Yeah, and just like there's so many other states that don't matter, because they're going to go to Bush no matter what. And H.L. Mencken said no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. And I think the Bush, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, neocons know that, and they play to the NASCAR simplistic kind of thing. And as I say, I'm not very hopeful. But it does make a difference. And being here in New York State, it doesn't seem like we can do much. But I really enjoyed a lot that you said, and is that someone who. I was the Western Mass coordinator for Bobby Kennedy's campaign back in 68 when I was 21.
Oh, wow.
I look back at it and say, you know, maybe the whole history of this republic would have been different if Bobby hadn't been killed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It would have been different for all kinds of reasons. You have to wonder. And certainly it would have been different if Al Gore had been elected instead of George W. And, you know, I feel kind of guilty, because I was one of those people saying, you know, Tweedledummer, and it doesn't really make a difference. Okay, you know, I can admit now that, yeah, you know, it probably would have made a difference. It's just we couldn't really see it then.
Oh, no, we didn't see it then. And, of course, it was before September 11, 2001, which was, you know, this is an awful thing to say, which I'm going to say next, because it was a horrible tragedy and, you know, it was horrific. But it was the best thing that ever happened to the Bush crowd.
Well, that's one of the things I was saying from the beginning. You have to look at who actually is helped by this. And if the people who want to cut back on civil liberties and want to impose all kinds of draconian laws and run roughshod over the rest of the world, if all of a sudden they're getting what they want because of a horrible instance like that, you have to look at that very carefully. You have to realize that, in effect, it is the best thing that happened to them, because all of a sudden
never would have been able to go into Iraq, which is what they wanted to do from the first place.
Right.
And the fact that still 64% of enrolled Republicans think Iraq had something to do with September 11th, which everybody knows is preposterous, which the whole president's crew, if they're cornered, they'll say it. They'll insinuate that it's all the war and terrorism, but it's... everybody knows that Saddam Hussein was a secular leader, that he hated al-Qaeda, which is religious fundamentalists, but they still manipulated for their own purpose. And it's, I don't know, I've been involved in a lot of elections. There was plenty of Republicans that I could support, but this crowd that's in there now is the worst. And, you know, truth be told, the George Bush 41, his folks, he surrounded him with, realizes that the guys that are the neocons are really closer to Pinochet and people like that than they are closer to Republicans like Rockefeller and Javits and other moderate Republicans.
You'd think there'd be somebody from that camp that would have the guts to step up and say that, you know?
Snowcroft has a little bit, and, you know, Baker has a little bit, but, yeah, but you're right. They really haven't. I don't know if you saw it. Dwight Eisenhower's son came out very strongly as a Republican for Kerry because of what's happened to the National Republican Party.
Interesting. Of course, you know, who really cares what he thinks? not to sound nasty, but it's just, you know, he's just related to the guy. But I mean, somebody who's actually involved, somebody who's actually part of the party.
Well, guys like Hagel and what's the other guy from the Nebraska from Hagel? But, you know, McCain. McCain's an interesting case because, you know in his heart of hearts that he knows what a fraud this guy who's in the White House is now.
Yeah, but, you know, he lost all my respect at the Republican convention when he just stood up for him and basically said everything he does is great.
And our New York Republicans, Giuliani and Pataki, I mean, you don't get any bigger frauds than the two of them. They're you know, gay rights, they're pro-choice. But they just stuck up to this right-wing nut of a president. And Pataki is scandalous when he keeps bringing up September 11th as somehow a justification for the invasion of Iraq.
And can you believe that nut is being considered for a presidential run in 4 years?
Pataki? I enjoyed your show very much, but right. Now the more I talk to you, the more depressed I get.
I'm sorry. let's try to cheer up, because it's going to be interesting. We'll have interesting conversations in the next 4 years, no matter who's elected, and it'll... It'll be, you know, history in the making.
Well, you're doing a good job. Take care.
Thanks. Thanks for your call. And thanks, everyone, for calling in today. It's always good to hear from our listeners. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. That's email, for those of you who don't know that. otw@2600.com. That's 2600. And tell us what's on your mind. Point out some interesting stories to us. Tell us where you listen to us from. We love hearing from you. And again, we're not going to be here next week. We will be here in 2 weeks, and we'll be begging for money in 2 weeks. So please, if you're listening to the show tonight, keep that in mind. You can only pledge while we're on the air. You can't pledge when you listen to us later on the Internet. And yes, our shows are all archived on the Internet, www.2600.com/off the wall, which is the name of this program. I'd like to just close off with one other news item, which I think is kind of scary. And I always like to... and with something scary, just so people have something to think about. Sinclair Broadcast Group, they're owner of the largest chain of television stations in the nation. They're kind of like TV's Clear Channel. They plan to air a documentary accusing Senator Kerry of betraying American prisoners during the Vietnam War. The network has ordered all 62 of its stations to air Stolen Honor, Wounds That Never Heal, without commercials in primetime next week. That's according to the Washington Post. And that's just 2 weeks before the November 2nd election. Sinclair's television group, which includes affiliates of all the major networks, reaches nearly a quarter of all U.S. television households. The affiliates owned by the major television networks reach a larger percentage of U.S. homes because they're in larger markets, however. A dozen of Sinclair's stations are in critical swing states like Ohio, Florida, Iowa, and Wisconsin. These are the buffoons. I'm stepping out of the story now. These are the buffoons who made news in the spring when they refused or ordered some of their stations to refuse to air Nightline because Ted Koppel had the audacity to read the names of the troops who were killed. He wasn't saying anything, no commentary. He was just reading the names. But they took that to mean that it was critical of the current administration and contrary to the public interest. So they ordered their stations not to air this. And now this. Now they're having this one-sided documentary a couple of weeks before Election Day, obviously geared to swinging the vote Bush's way. Now, can you imagine if Fahrenheit 9/11 aired a couple of weeks before on major television stations throughout the country? The outrage Republicans would be airing. it would just be unbelievable. But that's not what's happening here. I think what they should do, what Michael Moore should do, because I heard what he's planning to do is offer a pay-per-view. That's not the answer. That's not the answer. Pay-per-view? Come on. You want this thing out there. You want this thing to reach people. So, you make an offer. You make an offer to all of these Sinclair stations, because they say because they're inviting John Kerry to participate, like he has time to do this, that they're fulfilling any obligations for fairness. whether they're legal obligations or moral obligations, that by asking John Kerry, you know, to participate. I mean, imagine me asking George W. Bush to participate and saying that, okay, you know, that's the only side we're going to air because George W. Bush won't participate. So therefore, my side is the only side. You know, we don't think that way around here, fortunately. But what I think Michael Moore should do is simply offer Fahrenheit 9/11 at no cost to every single one of these Sinclair stations. You know, that's nice and fair. That's nice and equal. And it's not even costing them anything. And it's not going to cost him anything either because they're not going to accept. But that's my idea. All right, we're out of time. And we'll be back again in 2 weeks. And again, we'll be asking you for your support to help keep radio stations like this going, to help keep radio shows like this on the air. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall.
Three, four.
And remember, watch the debate tomorrow night. It's the last one. Keep your eyes on the newspapers and the websites and the media. And let us know what you find. OTW at 2600.com. Good night.
The memories of a man in his old age are the deeds of a man in his prime. You shuffle in the gloom of the sick room and talk to yourself as you die. And life is a short, warm moment, and death is a long, cold rest. You get your chance to try in a twinkling of an eye, 80 years with luck or even less. So all aboard for the American tour, and maybe you'll make it to the top. But mind how you go, and I can tell you, cause I know, you may find it hard to get off. Shuffle in the gloom of the sick room and talk to yourself.